Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is great joining you at the end of yet another summer week here in New York and from wherever it is you call home as well. I'm glad you could join me. And in fact, I will be joined shortly by a good friend, immigration and political activist and attorney, Lauren Martell, calling in from beautiful Hilton Head, South Carolina. Lauren and I go back a couple of years. She made it possible for me to address the Tea Party Convention in South Carolina, not once but twice, along with Joe Dugan and a bunch of wonderful folks down there. They certainly made me feel very much at home, so I look forward to having her join me. For those of you who are new to my program, I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration Service. Ever since 9/11, I've made it my business to go out there, pardon me, and try to educate our supposed leaders and our fellow Americans about the real significance of America's immigration laws. Those immigration laws were enacted for just two purposes: to protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. And it is remarkable at how politicians are so willing to forget the lessons that we should have learned on 9/11, which incredibly is almost upon us again, the anniversary, the 12th anniversary. It took this country just 44 months to win the Second World War. We have now been at it for roughly three times as long since 9/11, and basic fundamental issues where the immigration vulnerabilities are concerned are still not being addressed, and under the current administration in many ways, this threat has been exacerbated. Absolute madness. I don't even know what to make of it, but this is the wacky world that we live in today. If you want to read a little bit more about my background and about what I've been up to, please visit my website, michaelcutler.net. That's one word, MichaelCutler, michaelcutler.net. I would also urge you to visit the website run by good friends of mine, pardon me, Californians for Population Stabilization, and their terrific website can be found at capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They like to point out that they are in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. They are on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast, made some great friends out there. Always good joining them and working with them, and I have, in fact, been working with them for the past number of years as a senior fellow, providing my perspectives on the immigration crisis that continues, I won't even say unabated, but has gotten even worse. So this is something that I think should really concern all Americans, irregardless of political persuasion, irregardless whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, liberal, libertarian, conservative, Tea Party, it doesn't matter. This is about America's national security. And in fact, interestingly, this past week, I was notified that an article that I've written for a terrific quarterly magazine, The Social Contract, is now actually about to go to the publisher. So they sent me a sneak preview of my article, and I'm very happy that it's out there. I'm proud of the piece, and it's entitled Political Asylum, Where Compassion and National Security Intersect. And, you know, they had to cut down some of what I wrote. It was a much lengthier article than they had room for. But one of the points that I did not, unfortunately, find included in the article, so I'll cover it now, is that I am not opposed to political asylum. Quite the contrary. You know, I'm a great believer in America and other countries chipping in to provide safe haven, as it were, to folks who live in countries where their lives are in peril. I think this is extremely important. But we've got to make certain that that program, the program known as political asylum, is not somehow used against us as a weapon. And what we have found out is that, in fact, terrorists have used political asylum as a means of entering the United States and as a means of embedding themselves in the United States. And that's really a big issue. So that's something that I hope that you take away from the piece that I did. It's not simply about saying, gee, I don't want anybody to come here. And you know what you really need to realize is that there is a mechanism in place to bring lawful immigrants into the United States. There is a mechanism in place for us to bring high-skilled workers in. The problem is that out of corporate greed, we're now seeing that the folks that have the power, the money, as it were, are now trying to do things that would be irrevocably dangerous for America's national security, and I would submit would destroy the middle class. I believe Lauren's on the line. Let me go check. Lauren Martell, is that you? I think. Lauren, is that
you? Can you
hear me? Yes, now
I
hear you.
Can you? Yeah.
Yes.
Happy
Friday, Lauren. Thank you so much for joining me.
Happy Friday to you, Michael Cutler, too. I have this new attachment for my iPhone 5, and it's you plug it in, but it's
yes.
an old-fashioned handheld telephone thing.
Ah,
remember those things that we used to have?
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. So does it work okay? Can you hear me
it
fine?
It works fine. Are you having a moment of nostalgia? Is that what we attribute this to tonight?
I think so. I feel really comfortable talking on the phone.
Does your car now have a crank also?
It should. What an excellent idea.
I mean, why stop with your iPhone?
Exactly. You know,
my
iPhone looks like an antique. So how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I wish I could say the same for America, don't you?
I know. It's
tough
time we're living in.
Did you see the article that I just sent you about Mayor Bloomberg?
Actually, I saw your article on political asylum.
Okay.
Not on Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. I have to start out with Bloomberg, and then I want to move on to political asylum. And by the way, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining me. It's always fun having you on the show and playing the game of catch-up and that sort of thing. So,
and also, you know, talking about the majorly serious issues that impact each one of us, you know, on a regular basis and really need to become a priority for all Americans. Liberty and justice and freedom is not free. And so you can't
right.
put a minimum wage on what it costs to make sure that you're vigilant in those areas.
Well, that's a great way of putting it. It's kind of like what I like to say is that it's not anti-immigrant to be pro-American. How about that? Now, here's
That's
a story
I got to
start out with. I mean, this blew my mind. I heard about it on the news. You know, there's a bit of a controversy
mm-hmm.
right now because the federal judge has ruled that stop and frisk is discriminatory and so forth. And I have mixed feelings about stop and frisk. It's not only what's done, but how it's done. And you know, I was a federal agent for 30 years, and I think it's important that the police get the guns off the street. As an agent, when I made arrests and took guns off of the bad guys we arrested, we always had a little celebration. Because the idea
mm-hmm.
of a firearm in the hands of a whack-a-loon or a criminal should give everybody cause for pause. So
mm-hmm.
Mayor Bloomberg is all torqued about, oh, my God, crime is going to go up if we allow the bad guys to have guns. And I agree with him. I'm not sure how they're going to deal with this issue of stop and frisk. It'll be interesting to see what happens on appeal. But I understand his concern. I also understand the concerns about Fourth Amendment issues and so forth. You know, we're always walking this tightrope, and as a lawyer, I think you'll agree with me.
Yeah, that's true. And actually, I'm reading through, you know, a little bit of this article, and you know, keep going. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm not.
Well,
I'm
anyway,
not
the headline.
Necessarily...
Here's the headline. Mayor Bloomberg says city should fingerprint housing residents. Now, he's had several articles where you look at the article and you say, you know, this is a law and order guy. This is a tough guy. This is a guy that takes a no-nonsense approach. Previously, he said that they need to prosecute anybody who trespasses into public housing. And he said if you don't go after the people that trespass, pretty soon you're going to bring back crime like in the bad old days, and boy, are we going to be in trouble. And I said, you know, isn't that remarkable that on the one hand, he is so concerned about trespassers into public housing and what that means to public safety, but this is a mayor who's very much in favor of sanctuary cities, amnesty,
mm-hmm.
doesn't want the cops cooperating with immigration. So here's the question, the obvious disconnect. Why is it that he is so fixated on people who trespass in public housing but doesn't give a damn about people who trespass into America. Isn't that an interesting dichotomy of opinion?
It is. And I think, you know, I mean, Mayor Bloomberg, you know, as the mayor, I think he oversteps his bounds in what his job is, really, when he gets into some of these issues.
Absolutely. You know. Salt and sugar. And by the way, you know, Dr. Samadi, going off on a tangent, but I want to bring it back to this, but I have to tell you, because now that you've raised that issue, and that's
right.
What I love about having you on the show, you're always thought-provoking, and you come up with this stuff. Samadi was on Fox today talking about the obesity epidemic. And he said that they used to think that it was about a 5% mortality rate associated with obesity. New studies say it could be as high as 18%. And you know, you've
right.
got Bloomberg out there saying no salt, no sugar, not a word about heroin or cocaine. And I've been saying to
right.
people that there's a dollar and cents component to this, because that's all this guy understands is money. Well, guess what? That was the point Samadi made today. Dr. Samadi said, if you have this epidemic of obesity, public health costs are going to go through the roof, which is exactly what I've been saying. This is not a benevolent mayor. This is a mayor who really is all about the bottom line. So kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's go to the bottom line of his article today about fingerprinting public housing residents. And this just blew me away when I saw the sentence. Listen to this, Lauren. You're going to love this. He said that the mayor noted that while New York City Housing Authority building house about 5% of the city's population, they account for about 20% of city crime. And here is the way he goes with this. We've just got to find some ways to keep bringing crime down there, he said, arguing that most people who live in the buildings want more police protection. If you have a stranger walking in the halls of your apartment building, don't you want somebody to stop and say, who are you? Why are you here? Because the locks on these doors with so many people coming and going, you really can't, he said. Now, wait a moment. Why are you here? How about if we ask that of foreign nationals who are present in our country without authority of law? Is this
that
not yet
like
another
really
example,
point.
Flagrant example of a disconnect, or am I crazy?
Well, Michael, I personally don't think that you're crazy at all. I think I'm on the bandwagon with you. I've jumped on the train, and so I'm on your
you
crazy
take some Dramamine.
Crazy.
It's a rocky ride.
I know. If you're crazy, I'm on the train.
Okay.
So let me tell you, you know, Mayor Bloomberg is concerning to me on so many different levels, but the fact that he is saying these things, I think it's smart that you're bringing that to light. What are other people in New York City doing? I mean, I know he is in fact your mayor, right?
He is my mayor. God help us all. Mm-hmm. I voted for him
yeah.
the first two times. The third time, I said, three strikes, you're out of here, baby.
Right.
So
and almost you
with...
want to do that with every politician, right? I mean, you know, they almost
no,
get
I don't,
in
because
there
you
for
have
a couple
some good people. And, you know, I don't believe in term limits. I know a lot of people get caught up in that whole debate.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that politicians who are crooked, if you give them term limits, they'll just take more money faster when they get into office. And if you have good
potentially.
People. Potentially.
Potentially,
yeah.
Right.
So what I want
but,
is
you know,
that the electorate
the is,
sets
you,
the term limit.
You don't
limit.
Have very – and but the electorate's so neutered now. The thing is that, you know, term limits really were by the original servant leaders that originally, you know, founded our checks and balances. And
yep.
George Washington was one of the first. He was a man of integrity. And, you know, everybody wanted him to actually run a third term
yep.
as president. And he said, no, I'm done here, and we're going to pass on
enough,
the torch.
Enough is enough. I'm going home. I'm
yeah.
going. Get me out
yeah.
of here. Feet don't fail me
and
now.
Normal, like, that's what normal people want to do, right? At the end of a little bit of a stint, you want to train up another generation and teach them well. And then, you know, you go and you go and enjoy retirement.
And also, you know, again, absolute power corrupts, power corrupts absolute, power corrupts absolutely. I think that when people get too comfortable in a position of authority, there's a problem. What we've even seen in law enforcement is that most agencies like to rotate the agents in charge of offices, because if you leave somebody in a position of power running a law enforcement office for too long a period of time, problems may well develop. So they tend to like to shift people around to remind the people that the people at the top of the food chain, excuse me, and the people who work for them, that we are a country of law, not a country of men, or we should say people these days, because things being what they are, your boss might just as easily be a woman as a man.
Well, let's seek, really, honestly, it's okay. We can try to find a few good men out there. It's okay to have a few good men, and you can call them men, too. It's all right, Michael.
Okay, well, I'm trying to be considerate about this.
Sure.
But you understand my point, and I hope our listeners understand the point. But, you know, when I look at Mayor Bloomberg and that disconnect, it's astonishing to me that on the one hand he worries about people who trespass into public housing. On the one hand he says you have a stranger walking in the halls of an apartment building. How about a stranger mm-hmm. walking on the streets of our towns and cities? You know, mm-hmm. we admit so many people legally into the United States, folks. It's not as though we've thrown up these walls and said, stay out. We make it very easy to come here. I think, I would argue, too easy. Fraud runs rampantly through the programs, which we will get to momentarily about my thing about political asylum. But understand the problem. You look at people like Bill Gates, who says, oh, if we don't bring in foreign entrepreneurs, America is screwed. Okay, great statement. Meanwhile, where was he born? The United States. Where was Zuckerberg born? The United States. We can go down this list. And yes, you do have Elon Musk, who came here from South Africa. He's an immigrant. I don't know if he's a citizen or he's got a green card, but we certainly made it easy for him to come here. You know, if mm-hmm. Elon Musk could not be living and working in the United States, then I'd be the first one to say, that's stupid, we got to change things. But Musk is here, and he is working, and he is successful, as are other foreign entrepreneurs. It's not that we block these folks. There's ample opportunities for the truly brilliant and distinguished individuals from every walk of life to come to America and become part of this great tapestry that is the United States of America. But what we're looking mm-hmm. at now is the willful destruction at the hands of the greedy and the power hungry of America's mm-hmm. middle class and America's national security. If Bloomberg thinks it's a threat that strangers are wandering around public housing, why in the world doesn't he think in this post-9/11 world in particular that it's a threat when strangers wander around our city streets and through neighborhoods across America? There's mm-hmm. such a disconnect.
Well, there really is. And honestly, I mean, you know, I'm just wondering why he is so concerned right now, because there is a lot of potential for corruption in public housing, you know, in the way those things are done there. So is there a specific set of is there a specific area in New York that he's,
no, he's
you
just
know,
saying that if you're living
pinpointed
in public housing. No, well, we have in New York City, I don't know if you've been to New York, but we have very, very big housing projects. They're tall buildings. I mean, some of these buildings run 20 stories tall. The police, in fact, refer to going on vertical patrol. I've done it with the cops. I've done mm-hmm. it in Manhattan. I've done it in the Bronx and Brooklyn, because what you would find, amazingly, you know, you drive by an apartment house or an apartment complex. It's usually many buildings, you know, occupied by thousands of people, and you would find all kinds of crimes going on in the hallways and in the apartments.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's real concern. In fact, one of the things that we saw happening.
Didn't Giuliani clean all that up? Was it back in the day, didn't Giuliani kind of clean all that up, though? I mean,
well, he cleaned up a lot of it.
I don't know the statistics right now. What under Bloomberg's watch is, you know.
Well, no, I think he's continued Giuliani's policies. But I have my issue with Giuliani also. Mayor Giuliani, here's an interesting story. You know, we've talked about this before. I worked with Senator Alphonse D'Amato when he was the senior senator from New York back in the early 80s to convince him to change the reentry law to make reentry for criminal aliens a crime separate and distinct for the crime that's committed by an illegal alien who's simply working illegally. Up until the change in law, there was no consideration given to the background of the alien. If you were an alien and if you were deported and you came back, the worst you would face is 2 years in jail. And my attitude, and a lot of my colleagues agreed with me, and I convinced a whole bunch of my buddies, over 30 of my fellow agents over a six-month period went to D'Amato's office. And we said, look, it makes sense that 2 years is the jail sentence for a guy working on a farm or a woman working in a sweatshop or a factory or whatever. But if you're a criminal, if you're going out there raping and robbing and selling drugs and pulling off insurance scams and those sorts of things, if you get deported and you come back, I want to drop a safe on your head. This should be a 20-year maximum crime. And yes, well, I'm big on Wile E. Coyote
cruel
and Roadrunner.
That's not cruel and unusual. Everybody
wants the good old Acme Save Company. My favorite entertainment to this day, and then here I am in my 60s, but I never want to grow up. So, but anyway, getting back to this, we convinced them that we needed to do this, and that became the law of the land. An alien who commits crimes and gets convicted for selling drugs, raping, robbing, arson, whatever, they get deported. If they come back, they're looking generally at a minimum of 5 years in jail and a maximum of 20 years in jail. And it was a great delight for me, I have to tell you, that I made the first arrest in New York under the enhanced penalties. We took a Dominican drug dealer out of an upstate jail. He was very fluent in the English language and very arrogant. And when we went to pick him up, my partner and I, he said to me, "My chauffeur is here. I hope you wash the car." And he was very glib and very, flippant about the whole deal. I said, "Well, the car is nice and clean, not for your benefit, but for mine. But quite frankly, the home you're going to will still have bars on it. You're going to a different cage." And he accused me of being a liar.
Wow.
And he didn't realize I was serious. He came out of doing several years in jail for selling drugs in upstate New York, and he suddenly found himself being arraigned and charged with unlawful reentry as what's known as an aggravated felon. He got 5 years in jail. I was there for a sentencing. And this tough drug dealer was actually crying in the courtroom, which did my heart good, because this guy had a rap sheet that went on forever. He was violent. He had assaulted people. He was involved with firearm crimes. So to see this guy get another 5 years in jail, it did us all good.
Well, you felt like justice was served.
Justice was served.
And here's what I want to say is what makes, sense to me, and I don't think is happening now compared to what you were talking about then under D'Amato, is that the people got deported. I don't even really think we're deporting very many of the people that we're finding. What we're doing is either catch and release or putting them in holding places at the taxpayer dime or putting them in jail or whatever.
Well, they're deporting some,
but
they just released a bunch using sequestration of funding as an excuse to put criminals back out on the street, which blows my mind. And they wouldn't
criminal.
Give out the names. Because if they commit crimes, you could probably sue the government and say, "Hey, wait a minute, this guy was a rapist. He raped five girls. You put him back out on the street, and he raped my daughter, my sister, my wife, whatever." So,
give me the idea of suing the government, because that is so something that I'm very intrigued by.
We should all be intrigued by it. But here's my point.
Yeah.
So Giuliani agreed, because when I spoke with Al D'Amato, we had this big conference, and the conference call on the speaker, there's Rudy. And Rudy Giuliani in those days was the U.S. attorney over in Manhattan, Southern District of New York. He had just come from Maine Justice, where I believe he had the number 3 desk. Big law enforcement guy. "Yeah, this is great, Mr. Cutler. You've got a great idea. We're going to do it. You're right." And then he becomes the mayor. And suddenly... His whole attitude changed. In fact, on his watch, a police officer by the name of Robert Machete was killed by an alien that I had physically deported, a Panamanian. We had put him on a plane, Ronaldo Rayside, drug dealer. This guy had a green card. He forfeited it because he'd been convicted of drug crimes. We put him on an airplane. He came back, was arrested twice by the New York City Police Department during the days of Rudy Giuliani as mayor. Because of sanctuary policies, the police were prohibited from notifying immigration that they had a prior deportee in custody. This guy's a felon on those charges, by the way. You get deported, you come back, it's a felony. Some politicians will say, "Well, it's only a misdemeanor if you run the border." So let's clear this up, folks, while we're having at it. Reentry or entry into the United States without inspection may or may not be a felony. It depends on the individual and circumstances. It's interesting. You and I spoke about this morning. If a police officer walks by a bank and he sees a guy with a mask wielding a shotgun, and the guy beats somebody over the head with a shotgun in a bank and shoots somebody and steals the money, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that that police officer is witnessing a series of felonies in progress. Possession of the weapon,
yeah.
assault, robbery, we can go on. When someone runs the border and a Border Patrol agent sees the guy running the border or the gal running the border, he doesn't know if it's a felony. Because if this is the first time that this person has ever done it, then in fact it's not a felony. But if this person was deported from the United States and is now coming back illegally, the only question is it an aggravated felon or not? If it's not an aggravated felon, then the guy's looking at 2 years in jail. A felony nonetheless. Over a year in jail, it's a felony. If this is a criminal, the penalty could be as high as 20 years in jail. So when people say, well, running the border is only an administrative violation, baloney. Because lots of those folks that are running the borders, ladies and gentlemen, were previously deported and may be facing as much as 20 years in jail. I mean, think of how few crimes there are that you could commit where the penalty could get you free room and boarding, you know, free housing for 20 years. This is a serious damn crime. So when I hear politicians say, oh, running the border is no big deal, not so quick. So anyway, Ronaldo Rayside.
Who even said that in their right mind?
Right. So Ronaldo Rayside got deported, comes back, the cops arrest him, they couldn't notify immigration, he resisted arrest, they had to put him back out on the street. They arrest him a second time. Guess what? Couldn't call immigration. Rudy Giuliani said, put him back on the street. The third time, Robert Machado and his partner stop him for a motor vehicle violation. Mundane deal. Driving, whatever, running a red light in Brooklyn. Machado was part of the Brooklyn South Task Force. I rode with those guys many nights. We did lots of arrests together. I mean, this was really personal for me on so many levels. And Rayside goes for Machado's gun. Bullets fly. And Officer Machado dies on a street corner in Brooklyn. He was 24 years old. His wife was pregnant with a daughter he would never meet. I testified at the murder trial. And then by accident, I went to a supermarket one day, and the snow was starting to fall, and the ice was starting to form. And you don't generally have those headaches in the Hilton Head, but we get them up here. And
having pouring down rain this weekend.
You have what?
Not normal. We're definitely having pouring down rain this weekend, by the way. It's just, it's like a lot of snow.
I like that expression. We haven't poured. I'm waiting for the meteorologist to announce that one. We're having pouring down rain. But,
it is.
But you don't have the ice
and
snow
usually.
There's
a lot of rain. we don't. No. And so those are brutal conditions to go out and have to enforce the law. You know, those are brutal conditions. So you're out there and you're trying to do the right thing.
But so here's my point that I wanted to make. So I was in a rush to get home before the ice started to really make the roads into a skating rink. And I see one young lady open up a line at the supermarket. So I zip into her line. I notice she's wearing a miniature police badge. And I said,
what's
to
a
her,
miniature? Wait a second. Wait, dial back. What's a miniature police badge?
It's a courtesy shield. They give them out. Police officers can give them to family members and that sort of thing. My family have miniatures of my old badge, my special agent badge, because they did produce those. And it's just a courtesy thing that you give to them. And it's a nice keepsake.
Mm-hmm.
And she had it on a chain around her neck. And I immediately spotted the badge. And I said, who's the cop? She said, my dad. I said, oh, where does he work? She said, he's dead. But there was absolutely no emotion. And I guess I did a little double take, and she said, look, forgive me. It's been a long day. And she said, I never really knew my dad. He died before I was born. And I just looked at her, and I said, oh, my gosh. I said, was your father killed in the line of duty? She said, yeah. I said, is your last name Machado? And she just froze. She said, how do you know? And I told her that I had testified at the trial of the bastard that killed her dad.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, I couldn't drive. I mean,
now,
I was
there's
shaking
a faith,
so badly.
That's amazing, Mike. And I mean,
well,
there's
a
faith. That's a faith to what's going on, that our politicians are so blasé. I mean, those are real crimes and real victims.
Including Rudy. Oh, America's mayor. My rear end.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Rudy Giuliani now saying, well, if you're here illegally, we've got to give you tamper-proof identity documents. I have a better question, Rudy. I doubt you're listening tonight, but if you are, what name do you put on those documents if these folks are undocumented? If you look at the 9/11 Commission report and the staff report, because their staff put together a report on terrorist travel, this was one of the key issues, the way that these folks enter the United States, the way that they get identity documents. The 19 terrorists in the aggregate used over 300 false identities. So now look at what this administration is doing with these deferred action cases, the so-called DREAM Act. They must be dreaming, or actually we're dreaming, we're having a nightmare. They've processed hundreds of thousands of undocumented aliens, giving them identity documents without even a face-to-face interview. Some article I read said that the oldest have been in their mid-20s, but if you look at the average age of terrorists, think about the Tsarnaev brothers, how old were they? In their mid-20s. So we are giving illegal aliens who are undocumented identity documents without any way of knowing when they got here, who they really are, or why they're really here. This is a prescription for tragedy. You know, years ago in one of my congressional hearings, I said that any politician who votes for any sort of a blanket, massive amnesty program of any kind should get the MVP award from Al-Qaeda. And I stand by that statement, Lauren Martel.
Well, I agree with everything you said, and that was a powerful story that you told about your personal experience with this, and segueing into, you know, the recent article that you've done on political asylum where compassion and national security intersect. Again, very factual, very well written, and
thank you.
And powerful, and it makes sense. So you even have a special quote in there from our own South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
I thought that would catch your eye somehow.
It did.
Why don't you read it?
And you know, well, here it is. It says Republican, and it says the AP report noted, and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said Sunday. And this is referring back to the Boston bombings from the Boston Marathon that left three dead, should urge us to act quicker, not slower, when it comes to getting the 11 million identified, referring to its estimated number of immigrants living in this country illegally. And then joining him, Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer of New York added, keeping the status quo is not a very good argument given what happened in Boston. So it really makes me nauseated that they were trying to hijack themselves, that
yep.
terrible tragedy in Boston, for nefarious purposes and political agenda.
Well,
I think absolutely wrong.
I agree, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to agree with Schumer, which almost never happens. Status quo is not acceptable. Now I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Status quo
is not
acceptable, and the status quo is non-enforcement today. And what he wants
exactly.
to do is to make it worse. You want to change status quo, Chucky baby, enforce the damn laws that were designed to protect us.
That sounds like a remedy. That sounds like an actual solution to the issues that we are
doesn't
experiencing
it?
In America. Yeah.
Doesn't it? And what
yes,
I've been saying
does.
We need is what I call comprehensive immigration law enforcement compile. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's
needed. Oh, it's good. Well, and so what's going on now from a procedural perspective? I mean, so many people get confused, you know. Okay, the gangsters of eight came up with this legislation. Albeit, I'm sure, a lot of influence by various lobbyists and various other people who want to have, you know, their little piece of the pie.
Think?
Well, you know, I kind of stepped back for a second and
you.
I started thinking about it.
You
I know. And so we've got the casinos, you know, 1,200 pages. We've got casinos in Nevada. Harry Reid, you know, jumping up and down about how this needs – he's like the Nancy Pelosi of Obamacare. Harry Reid is the Nancy Pelosi to this immigration bill, you know,
yep.
saying it's going to go through no matter what.
And you won't know what's in it until after we pass it, and then look out.
But you're going to love it. You're going to love it.
You're going to love it, yes.
Yeah, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. I have a story exactly to that once we,
it's like
we
a rapist
talk a little bit
telling
more about
the girl that it's a date.
Yeah, we're having fun here. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
No, I mean,
who's
it's
we?
Such a...
Who's we?
That's the we, you know, and this maybe I will just tell you. I do a lot of family court work, and I did a divorce for somebody today who actually is Chinese here in America, and she's legally here. She married another Chinese man who came in basically through her, which is one of the ways you say is that people come to America. They embed
right.
themselves either through
yep.
American, you know, marriages or whatever. So this was
yep.
a legal marriage, right? It's a legal marriage.
Right.
And he comes over here. They're only married for a brief period of time. And then he takes off and she doesn't even know where he goes. She doesn't know
yep.
where he is, right? And
well,
so
it was
we
legitimate
to,
for her, but not legitimate for him is what I'm going to guess the deal is. He probably had this
yeah,
in the back
yeah.
of his
she's,
head all along.
Sure. She's in good faith. Yeah. So anyway, so what ends up happening is, you know, we have to publish through the newspaper because we don't know where he is, last known address, blah, blah, blah. My point here is that from a state court perspective, in the family court, there's nothing my family court judge can do beyond giving this woman a divorce. There
right.
is now some basically, you know, unknown guy out there, you know, running around and nobody knows where he is and he's unaccounted for. He'll have to eventually deal with his visa status. Maybe, you know.
Maybe.
So, yeah.
Maybe.
So my point is I we have some
Does
time.
Does she have a file for his green card?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's, yeah, that's something else that she had been working on, and I'm not sure that he actually even got that. But we had
okay.
some time while we were before we went into court. And so, you know, I sort of asked her, you know, what do you like about being in America? I mean, why do you come over here to America and work, and why do you want to be here? And she said all the things that normally you'd think is that there's freedom and you can work. And,
okay.
again, this isn't a fabulous entrepreneur. This is just somebody who's working and enjoying life and, you know, and freedoms over here that they
right.
don't have in China. And
yep.
She explained to me some things about China that I didn't know, and it was really enlightening for me and important for me. I think you really need to discuss. That's why I'm saying you need to talk to other people from other places so that you understand why they think what they think or why they believe
what
they think.
What did she tell you that you may have found surprising?
Well, this is what I found surprising is I said, you know, well, the difference between America and China is that, you know, the government is so big over there, they don't even help the poor. I mean, the poor are just so poor. So I said, you know, what if that happened here in America? And she said, well, that will never happen in America. And I said, well, why do you think it wouldn't happen in America? And she said, well, they wouldn't let it. And I said, well, who's they? And she said, well,
good
the government.
Question.
Yeah. And it was extremely profound because I said, well, why do you think the government wouldn't let that happen? You know, I mean, I said it's up to, and it's a different way of thinking. It's really up to the people to check the government, to check our representatives, and to make sure that they're accountable. And when they're doing bad things, to immediately cure that behavior. You know, we wouldn't send the baby with the, you know, extremely drunken, high, you know, crackhead parent. You know, you just wouldn't. So what are we doing?
That's
trusting
a great question.
Now, the unknown
let me just read something. This is an excerpt. I've used this quote on a number of occasions, and I used it in my article for The Social Contract, because I really want people to understand the madness. You know, when Lindsey Graham and Chucky Schumer there could say, well, I mean, I have no use for the guy.
He reminds me of that little guy, Chucky. He's coming
he
out
does,
with a knife. Yeah.
You know, he's so. Smart enough to know better, but I really think he's being immoral. I think
yeah.
that these folks are so focused on what their gain is that they don't care what the damage is that goes along with it. There's a program
mm-hmm.
out there. I haven't seen it. It's called The Expendables. You could speak to the issue of Americans becoming the Expendables. So you've got
mm-hmm.
Schumer saying status quo is not acceptable. The Tsarnaev brothers weren't hiding in the shadows. See, if they were hiding in the shadows, you want to make the case. Well, if we had taken them out of the shadows, one of them was a naturalized citizen and the other one had a green card and they had gotten political asylum. And I would argue that their family probably lied about political asylum. Because to qualify for political asylum, the alien has to go to the government and say to the government, I have a credible fear. If you send me back
right.
home, because of my race, religion, ethnicity, political affiliations, tribal connections, whatever, I face persecution or worse. So you would think that anybody who gets political asylum, if they were going to go on a vacation, it would not be to their home country, unless there was regime change. Then you might say, well, it's a whole new day. Anyway,
right.
the Tsarnaevs were in Chechnya, which is part of the Soviet Union, was the Soviet Union. Now, of course, it's Russia, and Chechnya is having its issues with Russia and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they got political asylum, where do they go? back to Chechnya. Well, that has to raise some alarms and say, wait a minute. If we said you can have political asylum because you're in danger if you go home and then they go home, someone needs to look at this and say, you know, maybe somebody lied. I'm not saying they did, but it's certainly, and with my background in particular, having investigated fraud, I will tell you that that's a pretty good indication that you need to start scratching beneath the surface. So look at what Graham is saying. Look at what Schumer is saying, folks, and understand why it's a lot of fertilizer. To say that we need to know who's here, well, supposedly we knew who these two knuckleheads were. We knew who their parents were. They weren't hiding in the shadows. We brought them into the glorious sunshine, and they go ahead and kill people and maim people at the Boston Marathon. So how in the world does this justify providing lawful status to people when clearly the system failed in their case? And it failed in the case of one of their friends who was no longer a student and promptly got admitted as a student even long after he dropped out of school. In fact, that was one of the issues that was raised when I was on with the delightful Megyn Kelly over at Fox News on May 2nd. Mm-hmm. So it was screw-up after screw-up. It's not isolated screw-ups, folks. It's a trend. Yeah. Now, let me just read this paragraph, because this is amazing to me. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. Asylum, you see? In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Doesn't that describe the Tsarnaev brothers to a T?
Completely. Now, who would have been monitoring them? What's the process of that? I mean, really, is it at some point goes into, okay, we've got some people here. I mean, how many people are in our country right now? Do we even know who have that
status?
We're
clueless. In fact, okay, great question. They just found out that there are a million non-immigrants who've gone missing. We misplaced a million. In 2006, the Washington Post ran a story about how Citizenship and Immigration Services claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files relating to applications for benefits, including 30,000 aliens who were given citizenship, and the adjudications offices weren't even given the files. You want to talk about flying blind? Now, once we give someone citizenship, we treat them the same way as a native-born American. So,
I have a question.
I have a couple questions.
And this goes into becoming a citizen. One of the questions out of Florida I always ask when I know I'm going to be on your show, I always ask a couple other people to roll in a few questions, hard questions, out of the blue to ask you.
Okay, let me get my baseball bat. We'll see if we can knock it out of the park. Let's go.
Comparing our American system to the European guest worker programs, for example, the Turks and the Moroccans in Germany, why would we even have to give them citizenship? What they do in Germany compared to here.
No, we don't have to. We make it a lot easier for people to naturalize. Most countries will not allow foreigners to acquire citizenship. People need to understand that.
And why do you think that is?
Just the way that, the political culture of America. You know, Chuck Schumer, there was an article. That's really a great question. Let me pull this thing up because I did a piece.
You have to think about it.
I did a piece on Chuck Schumer because he had these three platforms, the three planks in his platform, and his immigration platform. And I said that those planks were made out of balsa wood. How's that for a statement? But here were the four things that he said, and let me just quickly give you the reason that it was fertilizer. He said, we have to close the border. I'd like to know where the border is. This isn't just about California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas. We have 50 border states, any state with a seaport or an international airport. And now they're arguing whether or not they should close the border. Meanwhile, the very first sentence of the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel made the point that it may seem obvious, but if terrorists couldn't have entered the country, they couldn't have attacked us in the first place. Words to that effect. I'm paraphrasing. So
yeah.
Why is there even a discussion about should we or shouldn't we close the border? So that's number one. Then he talked about creating a non-forgeable document. Well, as I said about Rudy, because he had the same nonsense, first of all, nothing is non-forgeable. Just like a bulletproof vest isn't bulletproof, it's bullet-resistant. Tamper-resistant, but what name do you put on the document in the first place? That's the bigger issue. Then he said, letting in immigrants we need. Well, if we're not investigating applications for work visas, then how do we know what we really need? And when we let workers in, nobody makes certain they really go to their jobs. I don't care how many more agriculture visas we issue. If you don't police the system, then aspiring illegal aliens say, hey, why should I go to Mexico, deal with the corrupt federales, deal with the coyotes, and the there's another word I'm trying to come up with, but you know the criminals and all these other bad guys deal with 130 degree weather and rattlesnakes and scorpions. You know what? I'll get a visa that says I'm going to go work on a farm in Illinois, and I want to go to Chicago anyway. So I just land in Chicago with my visa and the passport, and I disappear once I land. So, I mean, this is all nonsense. Mm-hmm. And finally, a pathway to citizenship that's fair. Do you know that we admit more than a million lawful immigrants every year? They are already on the path to citizenship.
Yeah,
and, so
and
with
if
Rubio,
I were those guys in line, I'd be really mad about all this stuff. Because
wait a moment. I got a better one for
right
you.
Yeah.
I got a better one. So Rubio says, well, we're going to take these people and put them on the end of a 10-year line for citizenship. As it is, only about two-thirds of the people who get green cards ever apply for citizenship. They don't want citizenship. They want work authorization, and they want to bring their families here. Comprehensive reform will do both almost immediately. So, yes, they'll wait years for citizenship, but they will immediately, I mean, tomorrow, get permission to work and bring family members here. So forget about this 10-year, this is all fabrication. And they talk about, well, they have to learn how to speak English and they shouldn't have any criminal histories. You know what? That's already a part of the citizenship process that's already been in place for how many years? So why in the world do we now want to bring in still more citizens to further erode jobs and job security and national security?
Well, here's the thing about these guys. You know, it wasn't really broken. I mean, it really wasn't. It works well if you enforce the law. And these guys come in and they try to be like, you know, charging in and fixing it. And there's a lot of money involved in immigration.
There's a lot of money.
A lot of money in amnesty. A lot of favors. A lot of people,
I wrote a piece. I wrote a piece for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, at capsweb.org, and it was called Immigration and Occam's Razor. You know Occam's Razor, the simplest solution is probably the best solution. And I said that if you can't get your car to start, don't you think you should check the gas gauge before you order an overhaul?
Yeah, that is perfect. Yeah, I mean, that makes fiscal responsible sense. And
could you imagine, take your car to the gas station and say to the guy, my car doesn't run, and the guy looks and says, you just need to put gas in the tank.
Yeah, I need a whole new one now.
That's what they're doing. They don't want to put gas in the tank, but they're telling you that the damn thing won't work.
Yeah. Well, here's another, you know, going back to that quote from Lindsey Graham, and I'm picking on Lindsey a little bit because he's in campaign mode now.
Listen,
you know,
I pick on Chucky Baby all the time, so it's refreshing to have another bozo to kick around.
So here's the question is, they keep quoting this whole 11 million, you know, and that's like some magic number. I think it's been 11 million for like 2 or 3 years now. Is that even a reality?
For more than that. Yeah, it's probably closer to 30 or 40 million, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
it's
remarkable.
You know, if this guy were doing his due diligence, you know, I mean, I know I have a certain standard that I have to hit every single time. You know, I take on a case.
We keep reelecting these folks. Look, let me tell you something. In 1986, we were told that about 1 million to 1.5 million illegal aliens would emerge from the shadows. kind of like a butterfly squirming out of the chrysalis, right? Well, we wound up with almost 4 million butterflies. 4 million. Now they're telling us 11 million. If the same ratio holds true, we're looking at a minimum of 40 million. I mean, here's my question. And I did this in an op-ed for the Washington Times. And here's something that I want someone to answer for me. How's this for a question, folks? And please, write this beauty down, because you're going to want to call your congressman and ask this question. We're hearing that we will get them out of the shadows. That was what Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer said. We're going to get them out of the shadows and we'll be safer. What if they don't step forward? Who's going to look for them? If I am a terrorist and I'm in a garage right now putting together a bomb, and I know that my name and my biometrics will show up because I was careless and I was arrested in Europe, so there's a good chance they're going to know who I am. And I don't want to go anywhere near an immigration office for fear that they'll know who I am, okay? What happens if I don't emerge from the shadows and get registered? Who's going to come looking for me? Nobody.
Yeah. It's proving the negative. Yeah. It's
am
ridiculous.
I right or wrong?
And you know, you're right. But these guys stand up there and they say this stuff and like.
And they lie.
America's
why don't we say
it.
What it is? They lie through their teeth.
Yeah.
I witnessed 9/11 up close. My neighbors lost their family
criminal.
Members, and we are not the same in New York. We are all suffering post-traumatic stress. And what galled me the most about Chucky Baby is he is one of the two senators from the state of New York that got hammered the damn worst, and he is a resident of Brooklyn. He even went to Madison High School. My friends went to school with that bozo. So this is his hometown that got hammered, and he doesn't have enough compassion or consideration or decency to look at the damage this has done to not only America, but his hometown and his neighbors, and he still spews that crap. Schumer, if you're listening to me, you should be embarrassed, but I don't think you can be. You're beyond embarrassment.
Well, you know, he is, and these politicians, you know, for whatever reason, they get bought off, they're corrupt, their hearts are deceived, they may believe they're doing
they're grammatically
the right thing,
challenged.
Or genuinely...
No, they're grammatically challenged.
And all those
they can only conjugate verbs in the first person singular. They're grammatically challenged.
It's ego.
But you know what I'm telling you, though.
But our
Lauren,
system's supposed to work, though, Mike. I mean, our system of checks and balances is supposed to work.
And you know what? I was on a radio show this morning, and I had a host say to me, "Did you hear what Rubio said? If we don't pass comprehensive reform, the president will do it by executive order." And I said, "If he really said that, my gosh, I mean, someone needs to mail Rubio a copy of the Constitution, don't you think?"
No, Rubio doesn't know what he... Yeah, Rubio is just, he's a stooge. He's a pathetic stooge who, you know, he gets a lot of juice, though. I mean, the establishment Republicans that, you know, aren't, in my opinion, very much better necessarily than... a lot of people have the wrong... doing the wrong thing for the wrong reasons, and it's not very good for our country. And I'll stand here and tell you straight up that I'm simply a constitutional conservative American, and I believe that our Constitution is the beacon of light in the world, and it's something that, you know, we need to protect and defend. And when Rubio says something ridiculously inane and stupid, I mean, that's just stupid to say that. So why does a fairly smart man say a stupid thing? It's because he's pushing an agenda. And that's to really dilute the Constitution so that people don't even really understand what it means to be an American anymore. You know?
Well, and you know, when the president said that he was invoking prosecutorial discretion, I wrote a commentary for Fox News Latino. I said, no, this isn't prosecutorial discretion, it's prosecutorial deception. Prosecutorial discretion is kind of like when you go fishing and the fish is too small, so you throw it back. Prosecutorial discretion, to give you folks an example you can relate to, you're zipping down a highway at 60 miles an hour, it's a dry road, the sun is shining, there's nobody on the highway, the speed limit is 50, you zip through that radar trap and you get that bad feeling in your gut, oh my God, how fast was I going? And lo and behold, the cop doesn't go chase you. And you say, wow, what a lucky break. Well, you know why? Because the cop properly was exhibiting prosecutorial discretion, saying, you know what, the guy's not endangering anybody, there's no one on the road, he's driving sanely, he's higher than he should be, but we'll give you some leeway because if I take the time to pull that guy over, the Looney Tune that's doing 90 will whiz by me while I'm trying to give this guy a ticket. So I'm going to sit here and wait for the bigger fish. That's prosecutorial discretion, and it makes perfect sense. But it's about using limited resources wisely. But to take in hundreds of thousands of applications that you don't have the capacity to process, to provide those law violators with lawful status that doesn't get justification in the law, isn't about marshaling limited resources, because you're squandering limited resources to achieve a political agenda. So that's why I called it prosecutorial deception. And people don't realize what they're being spoon-fed. And again, I want you folks to think about it. We're being told we need to bring these people out of the shadows. And my question is, how do you make sure they come out of the shadows? If you think this strategy works, and I don't for a whole bunch of reasons, but if you buy into it, how do you bring those out of the shadows that insist on remaining in the shadows? That's the question, nobody, and that includes all these major talk show hosts and the network news, have yet to ask a politician. If there's a terrorist hiding in a garage, what are you doing to look for him? And the answer is they're doing bupkis. They're doing nothing. They don't care, because they just want to register the ones that they can, and the bad guys who continue to hide in the shadows, they're not going to go look for them. They've been given flashlights with no batteries. How's that? So they will stay in the shadows.
Yeah, and I don't really like being in the dark. I like being in the light. So, you know, here's we have about a few minutes. I definitely think so. And I have enjoyed this program tonight so much. I only have about 5 minutes left before
Laura,
run to another appointment. But
make believe you're a New Yorker and rattle it off quick.
Okay. Well, just in a nutshell, I just want to let you know that I think that this article is extremely, you know, well-written and thought-provocative. What can we do? I mean, I'm obviously going to share it on Facebook, share it on social media, but, like, what's the status of this dream bill right now? I mean, I know it pass in the Senate?
I don't know where we're going with all this, but here's the deal, folks.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, I was with the Black American Leadership Alliance in Washington. We're about 3,500 people who demonstrated. And I said to one of the participants, wouldn't it be nice if we had half as many people out here in Washington as came to watch Obama be re-inaugurated?
Right.
Understand,
well, yeah, they had a big
if we
there,
stay
too.
Quiet, then the presumption is we are big, fat, happy, and stupid.
Yeah.
They are getting away with the stuff they get away with in Washington, folks, because we are failing to put the fear of the electorate into them. You know, when you work for a boss, if you come in late and your boss doesn't say anything, you think that after a while that becomes tacit approval. You come to work looking a little unkempt, and no one says to you, gee whiz, why don't you shine your shoes? Why don't you put on a clean shirt, right? So you start to think that nobody notices, nobody cares. So if I came in a half hour late, then it's not a big deal. I wonder what happens if I take an hour and a half for lunch instead of an hour. So you take an hour and a half for lunch, and you know what? No one says a word. And so a couple of weeks later, you boost it up to 2 hours, and maybe you leave a half hour early, and then maybe you start to pilfer stuff out of the supply cabinet.
Right.
We are the employers, folks. If you are unhappy with how these folks who are supposed to work for us are doing their jobs, get involved. You know, that's why I always end commentaries by saying democracy is not a spectator sport. We need to be better employers. We need to remember who works for who, who's the tail and who's the dog. We seem to have forgotten that.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, ideally, it doesn't matter whether you worked at, you know, my first job, I worked at Burger King. I know you can't believe it. It was back when they wore the polyester outfits and baseball cap, and I used to, like, say, would you like an apple pie with that? You know, it was a real marketing campaign. And, you know, but it was, I was on the front desk and that was my first job. But I'll tell you what, I took it seriously. I wanted to be good. I wanted to be like the best Burger King cashier register person that I could be.
I think a lot of people that go to Washington do also. But, you know, Mark Twain had a great statement. He said, we no sooner send people to Washington than they forget who sent them and with what purpose. How's that for a quote?
Well, it is a good quote. And, you know, even then, but now, I mean, they get wined, they get dined, they get pushed around, they get taken over here, you know. And you really almost have to go up to Washington with your own circle of accountability people that will keep you accountable because, you know, I mean, it's just, it's a crazy place up there right now.
I know you're short on time, but I got to just tell you a quick story that you may find interesting and perhaps the folks up there. And it puts things in perspective. In 1976, mm-hmm. you know, I tripped over a terrorist plot to blow up a refinery in Israel. We prevented the attack. So for the balance of my career, I had a wonderful
Amen.
Relationship with the Israeli police.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
one of the guys, my friend Yoram, who I'm still in touch with, and in fact, on 9/11, he called me up and reduced me to tears by asking me what they had done to our New York, including himself in that. He was mm-hmm. back in Jerusalem at the time, or Tel Aviv, rather.
Yeah.
But he said to me, you know, before he came to the United States, he was a police general. And he was in charge of the fraud unit, and because they have national police, the fraud unit mostly handles tax issues. And he said to me, you know, it's amazing, Michael. He said, I sat at this desk in this beautiful office with a beautiful view, and in would come all these actors and actresses. And the actresses would always come in with everything hanging out. He said, it was like being in heaven. He started laughing. He said, but I never allowed myself the thought that this had anything to do with me. He said, you could have taken a department store mannequin and sat it in my chair, and they would have been jumping all over the mannequin because it wasn't me that they were interested in. It was the position that I held and the power that it gave me. And he said, as long as you can keep that in your mind, you're never going to make the wrong decisions. He says it's when people forget and start to think this is about them that we wind up in trouble. How's that for an interesting story?
Well, it is, and it's on point. And God bless him, and God bless you for putting, you know, thank you so much for your service, for all of those years that you worked active duty with what all you did. And then now with what you do, so much volunteer time, so much dedication.
Yep.
It's an inspiration to the rest of us in the fight. And honored to know you, honored to always be on your show, Mike, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Okay, absolutely, Lauren. I got to tell you, it's a delight having you join me. You always make the hour go so quickly. Time flies when we're having fun, and it's always fun when you join me. And your insights and perspectives as an American, as an attorney, always great. And I want to thank you for the work you're doing in South Carolina. Because, you know, look, we've got to take this country back, and it's not about which party or whether we're conservatives or liberals. It's about being Americans first and foremost.
Absolutely. And you know what? Actually, I just added a little thing to my resume, though, is I am the chairman of the board for U.S. Vet Corps Resources, the Low Country Warrior Connection, which is helping our vets as they come home from their duties. So I'm really excited about that.
Talk about doing God's work. That's definitely God's work.
Thank you. And
thank you.
I will catch up with you soon and keep doing what you're doing. It's an amazing job that you're doing. So talk to you later, Mike.
All right, kiddo. Have a great weekend, and thanks for everything. Talk to you soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, so long, Lauren. I'm going to stay with you folks for about another 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'm going to begin my weekend, as it were. But it really is great joining all of you at the end of the week. I hope that the discussions that we have on the program, the news reports that I bring you and then provide my perspectives and views on it, are helpful. Because I will tell you, it frustrates the heck out of me to watch the average news report where nobody looks behind the issues. They may talk about Bloomberg and stop and frisk. They may talk about Bloomberg talking about the need to fingerprint people that are living in housing projects, public housing. But nobody ever draws that comparison and says, wait a minute, if you're afraid about people wandering around in public housing without any way of knowing who they are, why isn't Bloomberg concerned about people who wander around our country without any way of knowing who they are? This disconnect blows my mind. Today, more revelations about the NSA. And I'm a great believer in developing good intelligence when necessary, wiretaps. You know, as a federal agent, I sat on my share of wiretaps. I served my share of subpoenas and executed my share of search warrants. It was always based on probable cause. There was a reason for doing what we did. We had to go to a judge and justify the actions that we wanted to take in furtherance of an ongoing criminal investigation. So I understand that in this post 9/11 world, everyone's more concerned and security's being ratcheted up. But how ratcheted up is America's security if we have politicians willing to give people who, for whatever reason, evaded the inspections process that's supposed to keep out criminals and terrorists and people who would do harm to us? It's insane. If you walk into an office building, you stop at the security desk, you're going to have to show ID, they're going to give you a badge to wear that proclaims to everybody you're a visitor, so that you only go to the areas where you're supposed to go. Bill Gates wants to bring the world in, but what's remarkable is that if you buy a computer running his programs, they certainly advise you to get firewalls and antiviral programs to make certain that some malware or some computer virus or a computer worm doesn't get into your system and do damage to you or your computer or your data. That's what immigration laws are about. I wrote a piece, and I want you to think about this. We're being told by the politicians that it's not a big deal when aliens run the border, which is why they say, oh, it's only a misdemeanor, even though it might well be a 20-year felony. Everybody seems to gloss over that fact. But if they really think that running the border is not a big deal, if they really think that the provisions of the law that is supposed to keep out the bad guys are not a big deal. And by the way, you will find that when I write stuff, it's not about touchy-feely good stuff. Oh, this feels nice. It feels wrong. I will always give you verifiable information. So if you have a pen handy, I want you to write this down. Write down Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, 1182. Let me repeat it. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. You can see these articles at capsweb.org. I've documented it on my own website, michaelcutler.net. That particular section of law includes all the categories of aliens who are supposed to be kept out. It starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are seriously mentally ill and are prone to violence or are sex offenders. It goes through a list of criminal violations that we're talking about, robbery, rape, murder, arson, fraud, on and on. It's also about keeping out human rights violators, war criminals, spies, terrorists, and fugitives from justice. Why in the world would any reasonable person say, it doesn't matter if we let in fugitives, it doesn't matter if we let in terrorists, it doesn't matter if we let in rapists and mentally ill people and people who have diseases that could kill us? This is no different from a responsible homeowner looking through the peephole before opening the door to a stranger. This is a universal concept. You know, we all learned knock-knock jokes when we were a kid. You know, knock-knock, who's there? Well, let me tell you, those jokes play well anywhere in the world because people understand universally that when you go to someone else's place, you have to ask permission. You have to do the may I routine. But if at the end of the day, these wackaloons who we've put in positions of authority really don't believe that those laws are important, here's a proposition I have to save the government lots of money. Why don't we tell all the Border Patrol agents to find different jobs? Why don't we shut down all the inspections facilities when airplanes from other countries come into the United States? Why don't we simply allow people who are coming in, whether it's from Africa, whether it's from Europe, whether it's from Asia, whether it's from the Caribbean, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's the Middle East, from Pakistan, from you know, you name the place. Let's just have those airplanes pull up to the gate the way that our domestic flights do, and let's just have everybody hop off the airplane, speak to nobody, just take their suitcase, and the only person they need to talk to is the cab driver, who they will then tell where they want to go. Would you feel safe if that was what we did? Would you feel safe getting on an airplane if people that were getting on the plane with you weren't thoroughly searched? Think of how upset everybody got, and with justification, when the DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, said that, you know what, we're going to allow golf clubs on airplanes and hockey sticks and knives. And everybody said, they're crazy. What are they doing? So here's my point. If you wouldn't feel comfortable getting on board an airplane where the people weren't properly searched, if you would not feel safe knowing that airplanes could come here from anywhere in the world and nobody would screen anybody getting off the airplanes, how in the world can you feel secure knowing that people are running our borders and then getting identity documents from our government when there's no way of verifying who in blazes these people are or why they're here. If this doesn't make sense to you, hang padding on your wall, because you're ready for the Wackaloon Asylum. The craziest thing here is that if you stop and think through what I'm saying to you, I defy you to tell me or anyone else where my reasoning isn't on point. If you believe we need to screen airline passengers, and if you believe that we need to inspect people and cargo entering the United States, then how can you make light of those people who intentionally circumvent that program that's supposed to protect us, prevent criminals from entering the country, prevent bombs and contraband from entering the United States? I'd love somebody to explain to me where I am getting it wrong or where I am being unreasonable. This is madness, folks. But what's infuriating to me, as my dad used to say, is that we will ultimately teach people how they should treat us by making it clear what we are willing to tolerate. During this era, during this time in American history, with the threats posed by the drug trafficking organizations and transnational gangs, the threats posed by Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah, the violence around the world being perpetrated by terrorists, if you don't think that we more than ever need to secure America's borders and enforce those laws today, what can I say? This isn't about xenophobia. There's nothing in those laws that distinguish anybody by race, religion, ethnicity. If they were, I could not have enforced those laws, I will tell you right now. Those laws are utterly and totally blind as to race, religion, and ethnicity. It's about keeping out those people who would do harm to us. And it's about making certain that American workers get first dibs, first shot at jobs. That's how we built the middle class. Prior to the Second World War, the Labor Department was in charge of administering and enforcing the immigration laws to make certain that American workers did not face unfair competition from foreign workers. Would that they do that still today? If you wonder why so many Americans are out of work, ask yourself, how could there be any improvement when we are admitting more authorized foreign workers most months than the number of new jobs that are being created? You got that right. We are admitting more foreign workers each month than the number of new jobs being created. We admit nearly 100,000 lawful immigrants, and even when they are children, please understand that this goes on year after year after year, and God willing, those children grow up and become members of the workforce. So the 10-year-old kid who came in a decade ago is now 20 and looking for a job. So every month, you look at the number of immigrants, you look at the number of H-1B visas, the exchange visitor visas, how many hundreds of thousands of students we're admitting every year. They all or almost all apply for practical training ultimately. The agricultural workers, the list goes on and on and on. And many times when they talk about the number of jobs being created, what's not being noted is that these are part-time jobs, they're seasonal jobs, they're minimum wage jobs. This does not make sense, folks. We are making American workers run up a down escalator that's picking up speed, and yet people are wondering what's wrong. Well, what's wrong, folks, is that it doesn't make sense. Not long ago, I said that to continue to admit ever more foreign workers into an economy that can't find enough work for its workers now makes as much sense as thinking that the solution to the hole in the bottom of your boat is to drill more holes in the bottom of your boat and somehow hope that magically the water will flow out those other holes, when in point of fact we all know that still more water will rush in through those holes that you were dumb enough to drill. Well, let me tell you, Washington is drilling more holes in the bottom of our boat, and Washington is aided and abetted by sanctuary cities, by people like Mayor Bloomberg, who wants to fingerprint people who live in housing projects, who wants stop and frisk to continue, and I'm not going to have that debate now because I understand his concerns. But if he's willing to do those things and is so concerned about public safety, why in the world doesn't he understand that aliens who evade the inspections process may be involved in issues of far greater significance than mowing lawns. The problem is, not enough of us, we the people, have engaged these characters in discussions, and that's something we must do. Congress is in recess. That's a good thing. Whenever you can keep those characters away from Washington, we can all breathe a sigh of relief. Because, boy, oh, boy, once you get them in Washington, there's all kinds of mischief that they're capable of, and they never seem to let us down. It's really important to be involved, folks. It's important to become educated. And for that reason, I ask that if you enjoy the program, please tell your friends about it. If you like my commentaries, please forward them. I am attempting to create what I've come to call a bucket brigade of truth. We live in a dangerous era. And indeed, as I always like to make the point, democracy is not a spectator sport. I look forward to joining you again next week at the same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, I hope all of you have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you next week. Just please go to those two websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. Good night, everybody.